Hey guys, this week's episode is brought to you by Agility Bed. If you've been looking to upgrade a mattress in your home, this Memorial Day, Agility is giving you 15% off your total checkout. Just visit agilitybed.com now through May 28th and enter your email to get the discount. Again, that's agilitybed.com. I'm John.
And I'm Sherry.
We like home stuff.
We like talking.
And we like the occasional game show sound effect. So welcome to Young House Love Has a Podcast, where we have deep and not so deep conversations about DIY, design, and life at home.
Today we've got tips for hunting down items that you'll love for your home without getting stuck in the decorating weeds. Plus, what made us give up on those meal delivery kits, why we're declaring a deer-related victory, and how your kitchen is grosser than you think.
Okay, so what's new with us this week is actually some updates to like really old episodes.
Going way back, guys. Getting the DeLorean.
Yeah. First, we're going to go back to episode 66, which is when we talked about those home delivery meal kits, like, you know, Blue Apron and Plated. And I'm actually forgetting a lot of the names now.
Yeah. None of it was sponsored. John was just obsessed with buying these boxes. They'd show up. I'd be like, oh my gosh, you got another box service.
Well, I was trying to sort of spark some more cooking at home because neither of us really enjoy cooking. I'm the default chef in our house, but we tend to eat out a fair amount.
Yes. And John's the default chef because there was an actual stalemate where neither of us cooked for a long time to see who could hold out longer. And guys, I'm more stubborn, so I won.
Well, and if you've been around the blogosphere or Instagram at all, you've probably seen these meal delivery kits, like the, you know, all the ingredients come in the box, they show up at your door with the recipe and you can cook it that night or whatever.
Sometimes you get one, it says, do not open the box. This actually happened to us. It said, this meal has been too delayed by shipping. Put it right in the garbage. Don't look at anything. It was like seven. What's in the box?
I don't think they wanted the liability of us eating like spoiled meat.
Le gross.
But anyways, you can go back and hear some more detailed recaps of the ones we tried and what we thought about each. But I think the true verdict of the experiment is that we haven't been using them for the past year or so.
Our main issue with them was that when you order them, you have full intention of eating those two meals that week or those four meals that week at home. But then they show up and you can't account for the fact that one of the kids has a play date that night. So you're going to just grab dinner out because you're out picking them up. Or like we're all meeting to celebrate something with the extended family. So we're going to go out. So that meal sits there making a mockery of you.
Well, and I think we also illustrated in our last episode that we have spent a lot of time over the last several months traveling back and forth to the duplex to do renovations. So like we have very irregular weeks. So it's hard to depend on the fact that we were going to have like a consistent number of meals at home on any given week because we might be traveling
or
some other family event coming up. So we found the boxes to put more pressure on our lives. Like we got to go home even though it's inconvenient because this food is going to go bad if we don't make it.
Right. Or we have to say no to like hanging out with friends or meeting up with the family for something because
we're like very popular.
A meal that's going bad that we ordered 2 weeks ago thinking we'd have time to make it.
Right. But the update is not only that that system didn't seem to work for our lifestyle. I don't want to poo-poo it for everyone because
do what you need to survive.
Yeah, I think they did solve a lot of my problems in terms of not enjoying shopping and being in kind of like a meal rut. I would say for a little while afterwards, we saved the recipe cards and made some of them by purchasing our own ingredients.
Right.
So I think it was helpful to that extent.
Because you guys get the distinction that when you go to the grocery store, it's much more immediate than when you order these kits. Like you are choosing these kits and they're coming like a week later. When you go to the grocery store, it might be a Monday night and you're planning meals for like Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Right.
You know, it's like much more immediate. And I'd say that that works better for our sort of flexible all over the place schedules.
Right. And that brings me to my main update. The thing that I'm excited about is I discovered a middle ground of this service that is working wonderfully for our family. I was in the grocery store the other day shopping and I noticed a display from Home Chef. They're one of those box meal kits. Again, this is not sponsored. I just stumbled upon it. And they sell pre-packaged meal boxes, like in a big cooler up in like the produce section of my grocery store was this branded Home Chef cooler with a bunch of meal kits in it. But instead of being three meals or four meals or however many would get delivered in a box on your door, this was a single meal. I think most of them serve two that I could pick up a la carte. Like when I knew I needed a dinner, I could grab one dinner, and I had, I think, usually like 5 or 6 choices of what it was.
So if you know you'll be home for a week, you could theoretically in the store buy 5, and I imagine it's cheaper than them shipping them to you, and you don't have that wait.
Well, I don't know about that. I haven't done the math, but to me, the big benefit to this is that it's not a subscription service, so right. I wasn't constantly having to be reminded like, oh, your next box is getting scheduled, go to confirm it, and then I have to say, delay another week, or, you know, I don't want this meal, or, you know, rearrange whatever meals you're being sent that week. Like, I found the subscription to be a lot of work for me because I was constantly putting it off.
I think some people love it. Like, our friend is part of a CSA where they mail her groceries, like vegetables and stuff. Yeah. And she loves going on there and choosing, like, ooh, I feel like eggplant today. Like, it's a joy for her, but it's not a joy for everyone.
Well, I mean, it was fun, but again, there was that burden element of it where I felt like, okay, I have to know what 3 days we're going to be home and that I can trust our schedule's not going to change. And then what am I going to eat out of these 5 choices, which don't always work for us anyways, because we have just certain, you know, dietary preferences that right. those meals don't always fit.
I think the common argument we were having is John was saying, I'm doing the boxes to make our life easier. But then on the night where we wanted to be out running errands or meeting up with friends and eat out, I would say, are they making our life easier? Because now we have to go all the way home to eat this box because there's guilt that we ordered the box.
Yeah, I think it was the subscription that was not gelling with me. So this middle ground of having a box at the store that still saved me the time of running around the store to get ingredients or figuring out a recipe and then collecting the ingredients.
Right,
I just, my brain is not built for meal planning because
right.
I will say they're about $16 per box and it only serves 2 people. So it is about $8 a person. So it's not the cheapest thing in the world. And yes, I know some of you more skilled chefs and meal planners out there will say like,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah, you could save so much money by just running around the store and getting those same ingredients. But understand that for me,
picture us standing in the meat aisle for an hour debating which one we should get and poking all of them. You don't want us poking your
right.
meat.
And I'm not buying 5 or 6 at a time. I'm only getting like 1 to supplement the other meals that are in my wheelhouse. And they've been really, really good so far. So like so far what we've had is a roasted chicken and tomato jam that came with asparagus.
It was good.
That was really good. And then what's the other one here? I have the card with me. Ooh, a pork tenderloin with roasted pears. Like I've never roasted a pear in my life.
You did it with finesse.
Thank you. I just wanted to throw it out there that I think I found something that works well for our family, and I recommend you giving it a try if you think that's something that might work for you, because honestly, I'm invested in this. I want this to work out for Home Chef so they don't take it away from me.
Yeah, we're like more spontaneous than the mail order one, but it's an easier kit that's thrown together than walking through the store.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like a half measure that's convenient for us.
Yeah, it's a bit more agency on the part of the family to get it when it works for them and when they want it, and they don't have to worry about like managing a subscription or delaying something or accepting a meal that they really wouldn't have picked if there isn't a better option that week from the service they're using.
That's so true.
Yeah. And the other update, because I said there were a couple, is from episode 99, which was about a very gross home experiment we were doing in our backyard. If you recall, we had an issue with deer and some of the new landscaping that we had put in the fall of 2017. Last spring was just ravaged by the deer. They like
we love the deer, but yeah. They eat things that we spend a lot of money on, and then we don't want them to eat that. So we're like, please stay, enjoy our woods, eat my weeds, but please don't eat my real plants, especially when there are deer tolerant varieties that are not supposed to even be interesting to them. They will eat a prickly holly bush. They will eat a maple, which is allegedly not a deer friendly plant. They will eat everything in our yard.
Yes, I will put a link in the show notes to the old episode because you can see in those show notes just how they totally stripped our cherry tree, our ginkgo tree, the hollies, like everything. It was bad, guys.
And it was like a bad Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, very bad. And so the experiment we took on was some deer repellent techniques, one of which was human urine.
A lot of you guys recommended human urine, and you said, much like coyote urine, which you can purchase on Amazon, they don't like the smell of some other beast in their area.
And
we are beasts.
Yes, we are predators. Not really, but We thought that's a free way to try to keep them off our plants.
We were like, get the cup every time you go in the bathroom and go sprinkle it outside.
Yeah.
And I think we did an update on this originally.
Oh, did we?
I think we just said it was hard to maintain because if you go on vacation, like for example, I would have feared the entire time we were in Chicago that the bushes were unmanned because every time it rains, it kind of washes the scent away.
Well, and also it's gross.
It's gross. We did it for about 5 days.
Yeah. It didn't last super long. But I think, yeah, the update maybe we did was we were trying something else called Liquid Fence, which is a spray that does not have urine in it. It has, if we all remember, putrescent egg solids.
The grossest thing you've ever seen on a list of ingredients.
Yeah, but the Liquid Fence is intended to provide an unpleasant smell to things like deer and rabbits so that they don't chew on your greenery.
But let me interrupt you because everybody listening is going to say, oh my gosh, use Irish Spring soap, use human hair. We also tried those. Everybody gave us lots of remedies. We tried all of them. So far, Liquid Fence is the only thing that works and lasts.
Yes, that's my big update is that not only has the Liquid Fence seemed to have done the trick over the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 months that we've been using it. Basically, you're supposed to apply it once a week when you first start and then once a month after that. And I was very diligent with
it, guys. Oh, yeah. We did not want to fall apart and have them just mow down because progress gets eaten, okay? If you let the bushes grow a little bit and then you don't spray them, the deer will eat all the growth.
Yeah, and then this spring, once things started to grow again, I resumed my sort of weekly application of it because I didn't want to get lazy. I didn't want them to forget that a predator lives here.
Right.
And the other part of the update is that our landscaping is doing so well. It is so happy out there. We are getting so much new growth. I know this is not very exciting to lots of people, but it is thrilling to me.
It is thrilling. Things that kind of didn't do much the first few years, which is what they say. They say like the third year of growth is like the amazing growth. I think this is only the second spring.
Yeah.
But things are exploding with extra growth. Bushes that in the dormant winter months were half the size are now twice the size. It's just thrilling to have all this growth. So yeah.
I do want to like knock on some wood or something because I think it was around this time last year that the veritable red wedding happened in our backyard. I think maybe while we were away on Memorial Day. So it's still coming up. I'm still vigilant and I'm a little bit nervous that things could go south, but I'm very encouraged right now.
Yeah, we're buoyed by the fact that we were gone in Chicago and came back and things looked better than before, not worse than before.
And I'll put a picture in the show notes too so you can see how much happier our ginkgo is than it was in that sad stripped photo we shared last year in episode 99.
He was fully nude.
He was so sad looking. I looked at it this morning. Oh, and the other thing though is that one of our neighbors suggested that we may want to switch away from the Liquid Fence soon just to mix it up in case they're getting used to it, which I felt was a silly idea until I realized I'm getting used to the smell.
You're not as grossed out by the stench.
After you apply it, like I try to wear long sleeves and sometimes I put gloves on, but sometimes I'm lazy and I don't. I realize later like my hands kind of smell like it.
And guys, the yard doesn't smell like it forever. It just takes like 12 hours to dry.
Yeah. And it's far enough away from our house that we don't really smell it in the house. But if you're in the backyard, you can smell it right after the application. But when I smelled it on my hands later one day, I realized I liked it.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Well, maybe liked it strong, but I was used to it.
Ooh, you could tolerate it. Oh, and for everyone listening, these are not chemicals. We have a dog and 2 children. These are like putrescent egg solids.
Eggs.
They're stinky, natural things that keep the deer away because that's our jam. That's why we were trying human urine hair and soap.
So like I said, human urine hair.
Human urine, comma, hair, okay. Comma, and soap.
This is an important comma because otherwise that raises a lot of biological questions about you.
Right. I'm sure you could blast them all with chemicals, but that's not a good idea.
Well, actually, speaking of blasting with chemicals, I have a game for you.
That's a segue.
It is a segue, but you'll see. It makes sense. So we're going to play this game like our old school What's Not games, where I'm going to give you a list of things in which all are real except for one, and you have to tell me what's real and what's not.
Okay.
We haven't played this way in a while. And this one I said is kind of about chemicals. It's actually about germs.
Okay.
And let me preface this by saying if you're a germaphobe, this may be triggering for you.
Fast forward how many minutes? 5 minutes?
I don't know. Just click that button until you get past this. But I came across an article on Real Simple entitled The 5 Germiest Places in Your Kitchen Aren't What You Think.
Ooh, I know one of them.
Well, we'll see. I don't think you and I really identify as germaphobes.
No. So we're 5-second rule peeps.
That's a good way to put it. I understand germs. I try to take,
normal precautions.
Reasonable precautions to keep things clean and germ-free, but we're not, like, bleaching every countertop
every
day. No,
we don't have bleach in our house.
Yeah.
Also, see previous episodes where we say we take our shoes off because we don't want to clean all the time.
Right, exactly. Not because of germs. But I thought this was an interesting list because it did surprise me some of the places they listed.
Okay.
It's based on a 2013 National Science Foundation study about the germiest places in a kitchen.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you six things. One of them was not on the list. First, the refrigerator crisper drawer.
I mean, it seems like why would germs be in the cold?
Two, the blender gasket.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Hotbed.
Number three, the can opener.
I mean, I thought you were going to say knife block, sponge, cutting board. Those were going to be my three.
Number four, cutting board.
Yeah, cutting board for sure.
Number five, food storage containers.
I mean, don't we dishwash those?
Is this harder than you thought it was going
to really
be?
It's really hard. Wait, so one of them's a what's not?
Well, I still have one more.
Okay.
Last one, rubber spatulas.
Okay, so I'm trying to think about the rubber because I feel like rubber... Maybe they're making a distinction between silicone, because isn't silicone, it's like antibacterial and it won't...
I think rubber and silicone are interchangeable in this instance.
Then maybe...
Don't get stuck on that. I'll give you a hint.
I'm going to say Tupperware is the cleanest.
The food storage containers?
Yes.
Sorry, ma'am.
What is it?
The one that's not on the list is the cutting board.
What?
And I will preface that answer by saying it was on a different list that the National Science Foundation had done about germiest places in a house.
Oh,
but it was on the bottom of the list.
Oh, it's not very germy?
So it does have germ issues, but of all the items they listed in a kitchen, that was one of the lowest. It was actually lower than your sink, your counters, even lower than your stove knobs.
Oh, so what's the super grossest? It's got to be the blender thing.
Yeah, the blender gasket was number three on their list of all places in the house.
Like, I've also heard inside a Keurig, you guys.
Yeah, coffee maker was on this 2011 list. That's where the cutting board was when they were talking about general places.
Well, I've heard a real coffee maker you can clean, but a Keurig, you can't really clean the inside of it. So some people are really grossed out by that.
That's kind of the issue with a lot of these things because the list also gives tips for how to clean them. Again, for me, it's probably a bit more than I will do.
Right, we're okay. We're still alive.
Right, but I can share some of the rationale behind why some of these are surprisingly germy.
Well, why can't you just dishwash your Tupperware and your rubber spatulas and think it's better?
So it's kind of the same issue as the blender gasket, because the reason why that is such a tough spot and such a hotbed is because a lot of people are cleaning it without disassembling the blender pieces and actually getting that rubber gasket.
I'm sorry, but are people cleaning their Tupperware with it closed?
No, but a lot of food storage containers, like those little glass ones we have, there's a rubber gasket in the lid.
Oh.
And so you can take care of a lot of it if everything is dishwasher safe and you're dishwashing all pieces of it. But they're saying you can do a better job if that gasket is removable and you can take the rubber gasket out. Or if you buy food storage containers that don't have a separate rubber gasket in it. Like it just has one big silicone lid, kind of like some of our Pyrex that we have.
Yeah.
So there's not that groove in there that could trap things that's going to breed bacteria. Same thing with a rubber spatula. They said a lot of rubber spatulas, the issue is that it has a rubber top on like a wooden handle. And where those two pieces connect, like up in the hole of the spatula.
Stuff gets up in there.
Yeah, people are just throwing the whole thing in the dishwasher or washing the whole thing by hand. They're not taking it apart and getting anything that might be up in there.
Up in there. But can we revisit the fact that we are all living human beings exposed to germs every day, building immunity.
Some dirtier than others.
Right.
But, some of these things we're talking about.
We're like Pigpen on Charlie Brown.
Just with salmonella.
No. Fun fact, we have never had salmonella poisoning in this house.
Well, and that's what they're pointing out. A lot of these things they're talking about are mold, salmonella, listeria, things that can actually give you foodborne illness.
I got food poisoning once from a restaurant, just saying. Never from my house.
They said you can solve like the spatula issue by buying a spatula that's all one piece. So like an entirely silicone spatula that doesn't have two pieces connecting somewhere.
Hmm.
And you did have a good hesitation on the refrigerator crisper drawer, because I think a lot of us think like, oh, refrigerator's cold. Like as long as things are kept cold, then you don't have any issues. But the National Science Foundation found that in vegetable drawers and even meat storage drawers, that there still were traces of some of these bad bacteria, even E. coli in some of them.
Yeah, you got to watch out for the E. coli with the lettuce stuff.
Yeah, so their advice was to take your drawer out once a month and clean it with warm water and dish soap.
Never going to do that.
Yeah. I was like, we're lucky if it's a year.
Do our drawers even fully come out? Is that naive of me?
Now you're giving away too much, Sharon.
I feel like you just reach in there and kind of wipe it down maybe once a year when you remember. Like, truly, I feel like we're very healthy for being pig pens.
I think we are of the mindset that a healthy amount of bacteria and germ around you helps build your immunity and allows you to survive in a world that is never going to be
a bubble.
Yeah. But, you know, to each their own.
That's right.
Let's take a listener question, which actually comes from someone named Bailey J. And she writes, what's your process when you're shopping for a space, but you aren't 100% sure what you want? For example, if I'm looking for a light fixture, I have a general idea of what style I want, but I don't know the specifics. I'll just know it when I see it. However, this often feels like I spend hours scrolling through page after page of search results across multiple stores and websites, reading reviews, comparing prices, sales, and return policies. After a while, it gets overwhelming. How do I shop for something without losing hours of my life and my sanity?
Okay, I love this question because I think we all can relate, especially when we're looking for something, even if we know exactly what we want. Sometimes it's hard to find it and you spend a lot of time online looking around. But in this specific instance, it sounds like Bailey's saying she doesn't know what she's looking for. So she's looking site after site after site, searching for that one thing that is the one.
Right.
My first tip would be just remember that there's not one specific thing that will work, but there is one specific thing you will like the most of all the others. And my general approach is I don't like to buy something unless it is the one I like the most.
Well, can I qualify a little bit by saying, I think just like in love, I don't think there is the one, like the only one. I think there are lots of the ones.
Are you saying I'm not the one?
I think you are. This is tough.
This is tough.
I think when people are getting discouraged about finding their life partner, this answer is going way off the rails. It's discouraging to think that there's one person out there in the universe only who's going to be the perfect fit. And so I think there are a lot of people who are the perfect fit for you. So I'm not saying you are not the perfect fit for me.
I'm just the best of all of them.
But there's lots of backups. So I just think it's encouraging, whether you're looking for love or you're looking for decor, to think that there's lots of things out there that you will love and you will be happy with.
It's not like The Bachelor where you need to go on a date with 30 light fixtures, learn their return policies, kiss all of them, and decide who's the best. I feel like if, oh, we're still keeping this love metaphor when I say this.
I'm just hoping I dug myself out of that hole appropriately.
Oh, I don't care.
You're my perfect light fixture.
I'm your perfect chandelier.
Wow, you really upgraded yourself there.
I'm capiz, baby. 7-layer capiz.
Anyways.
Listen, to where I was going, saying this is also bachelor territory. It sounds like a lot of the decisions you're trying to make with your head and you're reasoning through them and you're trying to look at return policies and reviews and decide that way. I would encourage, even though this is annoying to hear, that you follow your heart. Because there is going to be something that your heart or your gut or your instinct tells you this is great.
Look, Bailey, you didn't come here to make friends.
You didn't come here just to get a safe light fixture that will be fine. You don't want a mid light fixture. You want the best one that makes your heart go pitter-patter. So my first tip would be just wait. Don't settle. Okay? But say you're like, no, but ma'am, I need light in my room. In that case, I would go somewhere and spend a little bit of money just getting a placeholder. An example was that in our living room, we had an ottoman for many years that we loved and it started flaking all over the place. We talked about this on the podcast. Yeah,
I was going to say that's a good example of this situation where we knew we needed to replace our ottoman, which was serving as our coffee table in the living room. And we talked about how in that episode, how we lived with something that was subpar for a long time because we were holding out for the perfect thing, for the one.
Right. And in the meantime, flakes of leather or pleather were like not only all over the living room, but we noticed that they had been tracked up to our bedroom, which is across the house.
Right. We ended up, since we couldn't find the one or a one, we ended up just getting a good placeholder. We spent just $20 on Craigslist to get something that would be sufficient. And that has been a good solution for now.
Right. So I would say either buy the thing you are so overwhelmingly into, you know it's the one, but you wouldn't be asking this question. So if you can't find that, don't spend hours trolling websites and stuff. It's probably not going to come to you that way. I would just wait and see, you know, maybe you'll see it in someone's room. Maybe you'll be on Pinterest and you'll notice it. Maybe you'll be at your friend's house and she'll say, oh, I just got this at Home Goods. There's another one. Like there are other ways to find stuff. Maybe you'll be reading a magazine, old school, instead of on your computer and you'll notice something.
Well, I was going to say one thing that Sherry and I kind of differ on in our approach to this is you do fall for things hard. Like if you've heard any of the vocabulary Sherry uses to describe objects being like, I wanted to marry it, I wanted to pet and stroke it. Like I don't always
rub my face on it.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I don't always feel as passionate, I think, about the things. Like, I still love them, but I have a harder time having like a visceral emotional reaction to singular objects. Like, if you want me to find a lamp that I just am in love with, it might take me a long time to be able to connect with that emotion for a lamp. And that's just how I'm wired. I think probably a lot of other people out there are like that too. And so one thing that I find helpful for me, because if you say to me, like, find the thing you're passionate about, that isn't always helpful advice for me. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
So if Bailey is like me, I have much stronger reactions and can tune into the reactions when I'm looking at full rooms or larger spaces than like singular objects. Like, if you send me to a website and I'm scrolling through lamps and lights or something.
Yeah, lamp on white, on white, on white, on white.
Yeah, it either starts to blend together and I hate them all, or I like them all pretty good. Like, it doesn't help me sort through. So what I find is helpful for me is to like look at spaces, whether it be in magazines or catalogs or online or in Pinterest, and try to look big picture, like not focus on the light specifically, and find the rooms that elicits some sort of response, some sort of emotional reaction to. Then you can go back and say, okay, what are the specific objects in this room? Like, what is the light in this room that I love so much? Because maybe I do love that light. Maybe I should go hunt for lights like this.
Exactly. Yeah. I would say the best way to hone your style, and I've said this on the podcast before, is to always be collecting inspiration, not just when you actually need it, but at all times. If you come across something in a magazine you love, rip it out or take a picture on your phone, upload it to Pinterest, do whatever you do to keep it in a physical file if that's what works for you instead of being on your phone. But I do it continually so that nobody ever says to me, quick, pick a light fixture, and I don't have a place to go. I have this continual cache of inspiration. And often when you look at some inspiration pictures, especially your like five favorites, I've said this before too, go into a Pinterest folder you've had for years and say, I'm going to pin just my favorites to a new folder. You will notice a theme when you do that. All of your favorite favorites might have light colored walls. All of your favorite favorites might have pendant shades. They might all have iron chandeliers. When we pick our favorites of the favorites, typically they are very specific vibes and they're similar. I will often just take to the catalogs I know I love and look at what they have, not because I can always afford those objects, but then I know what I'm looking for. If I notice it's a big fabric pendant shade, I won't necessarily go to Pottery Barn and search fabric shade, go to West Elm search fabric shade, go to Wayfair search fabric shade. That feels like a burn on time.
I think that's what Bailey's doing. That's probably why she's feeling the sort of exhaustion of the process.
Right. Don't go to each website and search or look through everything. If you hone in on what you like from your inspiration photos, then just Google it and click the shopping tab. And it basically shows me all the fabric pendant shades from a variety of stores. And so I'm very quickly getting to source this thing because I have a specific description. And I have the specific description because I've kept this cache of inspiration somewhere.
Yeah, I think it's hard for some of us, I'll put myself in this bucket, to play that long game where if I don't have a specific need, where I'm not in the middle of doing a specific room, or I'm not, you know, replacing something in my house, I'm not collecting inspiration. Like, I don't have a Pinterest folder or something, because I'm someone who just reacts when there is a need. And sometimes that does put me behind because I have to play the catch up that you've done all along, because you're constantly doing it almost as like a daily habit or weekly habit, because it's something you enjoy doing. You're constantly collecting inspiration.
Yeah, I do think that's true, but there's nothing I'm doing that is superhuman or above anyone's skill level. Like, if you're listening and you're having a hard time choosing things, do the exercise I'm doing weekly for 2 months. Every week, give yourself an hour, put it on your calendar if you want to. Every Saturday, sit outside with a lemonade and read some magazines for an hour. The next Saturday, go on Pinterest for an hour and pin things you like. I think everyone's eyes and heart can spark on something. They just have to find it. So if you're more in that seeking mode, you're more open to finding it. It will take you less time than if you were like, I have ignored this part of my life forever, and now I'm asking myself in 2 hours on the computer to get it right.
Right. I think Bailey, from how she phrased her question, is in that rational mode already of comparing prices and return policies. And it might help her or someone else in her position to take that step back, even though it may feel like you're working backwards, to broaden your scope and look at the bigger picture of a full room when you really just need to pick a darn light fixture.
Right. It's like when you can't see the forest through the trees. You're too close to it. Step back, take a more global perspective. I think that helps all of us in our lives. Sometimes we're close to things, and I hope that's encouraging and fun. You will build momentum, you will build a sense of style, and you will know what you like more and more as time goes on.
I hope that was helpful to Bailey or anyone else in her situation. If you guys have a question you want us to tackle in a future episode, you can always leave us a voicemail. The phone number is 571-4-YHL-HAP.
Hope you didn't hear me gulping that by.
Yeah, Sherry was drinking during that entire thing.
Sometimes when I swallow, I'm like, why is this the loudest a person has ever swallowed?
But anyways, I'll let Sherry hydrate herself again because we've got some, we're digging coming up. But first, we're going to take a quick break. So Memorial Day is coming up next week, and this week's sponsor, Agility Bed, is running a great offer for anyone out there who needs a new mattress. Now through May 28th, they'll give you 15% off your total checkout. You can always get $200 off with our special offer code YHL, but this week you can save even more, especially if you're upgrading to a king-size bed or looking to replace more than one mattress in your house. All you have to do to get the offer is to visit agilitybed.com and enter your email to unlock the discount.
Yeah, you guys may remember that we bought an Agility mattress for the beach house with our own money. They didn't give it to us or anything, and we have loved it so much.
Yeah, one of our favorite things is that it sleeps much cooler than our old mattress did, thanks to the layers of specialty foams and microcoils they have, which is something I'm even more grateful for now that we're entering the warmer months of the year.
So again, if you want to snag that special Memorial Day deal, just go to agilitybed.com, enter your email when prompted, and they'll take 15% off your entire order. That's good now through May 28th, and after that, you can still enter our offer code YHL to get $200 off your order anytime.
And remember, Agility gives everyone an 100-night no-risk trial. So if it turns out not to be the mattress for you, no worries. You can still return it with no questions asked. Again, that's all at agilitybed.com. Okay, so you know we love digging things that keep our children engaged, like activities or books or something they love. And we found a new one that I want to get on everyone's radar. I realize I said this thing is new. It's actually very old. It's something I had in my childhood.
It's retro. It's like good,
old-fashioned fun.
Exactly. Like, I feel like we unlocked a special level of Mario. We're under the ground. The music's in the minor key. It's like...
Perfect, perfect analogy.
Because we went back in time, but it's still... Kids today still like it.
Underground is not back in time.
That's... I'm just saying it's a secret level.
Okay.
Because I feel like kids today, we think they need all this stuff. Flashing lights, video, crazy, insanity.
Says the person who just made a video game analogy.
Right? Okay, I guess. But I'm like going old school, like Duck Hunt.
Okay,
I'm Nintendo 64.
This is a very analog, because we're talking about Highlights magazine. Do you guys know this magazine? Do you remember this magazine? It is so simple, and our children love it. So
squealing when it arrives.
Yes. So we have a 5-year-old and a now 9-year-old, and both of them enjoy when this magazine comes. We rediscovered it because last year my mom gave our then 4-year-old a subscription to Highlights High Five for his birthday. High Five is like the preschool kindergarten version of Highlights magazine. I think Highlights is just for like first through fifth graders or something. So it's not like there's a big difference between the two. But again, our 9-year-old enjoys it just as much as our 5-year-old does. So much so that like they got a new issue yesterday in the mail and they burned through it in 2 hours.
Doing like every activity. And these are like fun shape activities or spelling activities or spot the difference or circle the things hidden within the thing.
That's what I was going to say. The hidden picture games are the things that they love the most, where like you have to find the object in the drawing. So much so that this year for our son's birthday, in addition to continuing his subscription, my mom also found this special Highlights hidden picture puzzle book, which was like this thicker bound version of all of those hidden picture games. But instead of just circling the objects, they actually have stickers to go on the pictures where they find the objects. So this book kept them busy for days, like so much so that they would wake up in the morning and they would do that instead of turning on the television.
That's why I feel like we unlocked something special here. It is like a preference over the newfangled video, flashing lights, stuff that you think stimulates, quote unquote, the children.
Yeah, and it's like so, again, like you said, analog and simple, that I wanted to mention it because I feel like, one, it makes a great activity for kids you might be trying to occupy or give some fun activity to mix things up. I think it also makes a great gift, again, whether you're doing the magazine subscription, so it like comes throughout the year, or you just get this one activity book. I think the activity books are about like $8 to $10, so they're not expensive.
Yeah.
And all the links will be in the show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast. So if you don't know Highlights magazine or what we're talking about, you can see pictures of it there.
Do you know how much a subscription of Highlights magazine is?
I think it was $10 to $12, so it's also not very expensive.
Oh, that's so good. Does it come once a month?
Yes, I could be making those numbers up.
That's such a good gift, though, guys. Think about that. If you have like a niece or nephew.
Well, that's why it was so perfect for my mom this year. She gave the subscription and then also that big puzzle book all at once. So if you have a birthday coming up for a, I don't know, 4 to 9-year-old, there you go. There's your gift.
Done.
Or if you have a birthday party come up for like a 37-year-old, Sherry recommends you get them what?
Okay, I'm digging something John will make fun of me for, so let's just get that out of the way.
I'm going to be very quiet during this segment.
It's a face thing again, guys. You know, if you follow me on Insta stories, I love face stuff that's natural but interesting. So like I've used a jade roller, which is like an actual stone. You guys know I'm into crystals and all that stuff.
You dug that on the podcast.
Yes, it's cold and refreshing. I roll my face every morning. And I follow a woman named Grace Atwood on Instagram. She's like an influencer. She writes The Stripe. I think she's brilliant. Her face is glowing at all times. And she raves about this thing called an ice roller. And it's very much like a jade roller, but is actually like the roly part of it is an ice pack. You store it in the freezer. And so it almost feels like a jade roller times a million. Like it's the colder, bigger, more industrial version of a jade roller.
The daddy version.
You know what it is? It's a Zamboni for your face.
It really is. Well, if you guys can picture those blue ice packs that you put in a cooler or something, it's just that, but in like a barrel shape on the end of this stick.
So it rolls over your face. And if you've ever been someone who's read about the amazing things that cold can do for your body, like we've all heard, take a cold shower, it closes the follicles, shrinks the pores, it's good for circulation, it invigorates under the skin.
I've heard none of these things.
Oh, I've heard this, but I refuse. You know I love hot, hot, hot. There's no way I'm taking a cold shower. But the thing I love about the ice roller, because I broke down and I got it, it's $11.95 on Amazon. Did I really have a choice? I had to buy this thing.
You did have a choice.
I had to buy this thing. So I bought it and I was like, I'll probably hate it because it's cold. But what I've learned, you know, when you're outside in the cold and your cheeks get cold and then you come inside, what do they feel?
Like they're on fire?
Warm. It makes me feel warm after I use it. So I love it. So it is cold when you roll it all over your face. I roll it like sort of in a motion that goes under my eyes. It's almost like, you know, the cold cucumbers on the eyes for depuffing. Mm-hmm. This takes that to a whole new level. So if I wake up and I feel like I didn't sleep well, I feel puffy. I feel like my skin just needs to be like awakened or less like, I don't know, dull. I will use the ice roller. It wakes up my whole face.
Do you use it instead of the jade roller?
Like,
is this a replacement?
No, it's a like on mornings when I need more than a jade roller. You know those mornings people say my coffee needs coffee or like I need a bigger cup of coffee.
Right.
I'm not a coffee drinker. On mornings where the jade roller is just not even going to do it because I didn't sleep well, I'm tired, I feel half groggy, the ice roller comes in and he does his job. He Zambonis my face. I think you should try it. And tell me if you love it. It's $11.95. Do you even have a choice?
You do.
Thanks for listening. Young House Love has a podcast.
And heads up that we're taking next week off for the Memorial Day holiday, but we'll be back the following Monday, June 3rd, with a new episode, which, by the way, Sherry, is going to be episode 143.
Which is a very special number to me because back in the old pager days, the code meant I love you. It's the number of letters in each word. Now I feel like a lot of pressure to make that a good episode.
Well, and a big 143 to everyone who tells us what you do while you listen, like Sarah on Instagram, who listened while picking up gallons and gallons of paint for an old feed mill they're remodeling to host her daughter's wedding reception.
It's so sweet.
And check out this week's show notes at younghouselove.com/podcast to see how well our landscaping is doing compared to last year's massacre. And you can check out those store-bought meal boxes I was talking about.
Don't forget my ice roller. It is absolutely magical.
Later.
Bye. I think also neither of us are good at choosing a meat. So if it said like, oh, I have a great recipe for like a pork rind, you and I would stand in the pork aisle.
I'd be like, which one of these is a rind?
Like scratching our heads.
Wait, isn't a pork rind like that gas station chip thing?
Oh, it's like a bag of crunchy things.
I don't think they sell that in the pork aisle.
We would be standing there for a long time.
This is why I need meal kits.